Good afternoon. We are in Frankfurt at the Boston Consulting Group. My name is Nadia Yang. This is the first episode of the European Young Engineers. This online series is called Horizon. Horizon was launched to broaden the horizon of and through young engineers by providing a platform for exchange with leaders of society. The European Young Engineers is the largest NGO of its kind, which represents more than 350,000 young engineers across Europe. Our first guest is Dr. Hans-Paul Bürkner. He is the global chairman of the Boston Consulting Group. Not only was he the CEO and president of one of the top three management consulting firms in the world, but he was the first and only European CEO of BCG so far. Thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Nadia.
We have collected a lot of questions for you from our network before and also during the live stories right now. My first question to you was, you had a lot of leadership experiences so far. Under your leadership, the sustainability and public sector practices were launched. Under your leadership, BCG has grown from 4,500 consultants to 15,000 consultants. And under your leadership, 20 more offices have been opened, right? So the audience was wondering, what do you think makes a leader a good leader?
Well, I think it is important to really focus on the people around you. Leadership is not about yourself, but leadership is about others, supporting others to bring out their best, developing others. That's why I really feel the word serving leadership or servant leadership is the right approach.
And on a more personal note, what were the key features that helped you to gain leadership positions, and also what drove you to conduct and to implement all of these?
Well, you know, I think the key is really that you like people, that you like to engage with people, you like to work with people, and that you also recognize that on your own you can only achieve very little.
Yes, indeed.
And that you need a lot of others, you know, companions, collaborators, to really make it work.
Yes, I can just agree. And obviously you have chosen the consulting branch for almost four decades, right? So what motivated you or motivates you to be a consultant?
Actually, I must admit that it was really by chance that I joined BCG. I started after university, I started in a bank, and I must admit I did not like it. The head of the department told me that when I had ideas of how to improve things, that he would only take me seriously after 10 years of experience, and I didn't want to wait that long. And then I saw all the ads of BCG, the Boston Consulting Group, in the newspapers, and it sounded quite interesting, although I had no idea what consulting was, and I had no idea who BCG was. And so I applied, and by chance I got a job offer. Years later, I saw my interview grades, and they were way below average. So I was very lucky to have been chosen.
Yeah, I had a similar experience. And I must say, BCG makes a lot of good ads. I didn't know BCG at all before, but now I do know it. And I must say, I'm impressed by its work so far. And since you have been working for almost 40 years at BCG, what drives you every day to do this job?
Well, I think, you know, there is the opportunity to really make a difference at the clients, even at society at large. And of course, there's also an opportunity and a need for learning. Mm-hmm. So even, you know, at my age, you know, there is an absolute need for continuously learning new things, rethinking old approaches, and developing new ideas, new action steps. So it really keeps me up on my toes.
Yes, lifelong learning.
Lifelong learning. Yes, we always talk about it, but we always assume that it's fun. Actually, sometimes it's not fun. You learn the hard way.
That's true. That's true. But you can never end learning, right? So as you're talking to the European young engineers, our audience was wondering, Why do you think management consulting would be a good career opportunity for, especially for young engineers?
Well, you know, clearly, as I said, there is a lot to learn. And, you know, within consulting, and particularly at BCG, you have to learn a lot within a very short period of time. I did 12 projects with 9 clients in the first 2 years. Now, this no longer happens today. The assignments usually are longer today. You know, you still learn a lot and you get a lot of responsibility very early on. And that's why I think it is a really fantastic booster for your capabilities, not just in terms of content in different industries, but also in how to deal with people, because it's not sufficient that you have the great idea, that you have the right solution, but you also really engage the client people, convince them, and then together with them ensure that things get done. Because just having an idea or a strategy on paper is worth very little, if not to say nothing. Only if you really translate these ideas, these strategies into real action, into value for the client company, have achieved something? And I think it's so important to learn how to do this. You know, having a concept, having an idea is one thing. Really making it happen is a much more difficult task, but it's really absolutely key.
Yeah, indeed. And engineers are known to be implementers, and I think the quantitative skills might help as well.
They are. I have high regard for engineers, and we do have a lot of engineers from all kinds of areas: mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, chemical engineering. I mean, the whole range, software engineering, and they usually are, you know, among the top, if not the top. Consultants.
Yeah, I also believe that engineers bring along a specific kind of skill set, and with this kind of skill set, the audience was also wondering, engineers have a certain responsibility, and a certain responsibility especially for the European society. What do you think would be these certain responsibilities?
Well, you see, I know people I know that, of course, that people are somewhat skeptic about Europe. The demographics, it's quite an older society. There is resistance to change. There is an aversion to technology in certain ways. But I would say it's still, maybe besides Canada and Australia and New Zealand, the best place, you know, in terms of living and working. And I think, you know, we all have a responsibility, not just for ourselves and the family, in our families, but also for the communities in which we live, the societies in which we live, and really make a difference. And there are many challenges that we are facing. Demographics is certainly one part. I think we still have, huge challenges in terms of inequalities of opportunity, that we have to address in terms of education, in terms of having a job, having a good job, in some countries, of course, more than in others in Europe. We have, of course, the climate change and the issues of sustainability. And, of course, increasingly people worry about, digitization or AI make us all obsolete? I think, you know, these are, of course, challenges. These are problems that we have to deal with, but I think we can overcome them. I think there is a good future ahead also of Europe if we work on these things, if we really improve the education system further and ensure that people do learn more and also learn how to develop their capabilities. You mentioned lifelong learning beforehand, and it's something that people have to learn really realize for themselves, and of course together with the companies in with whom they are working. I think also in terms of climate change, we need to be really reducing emissions. I think we can save a lot more energy. We can save resources in general. We can really cut back on waste. A lot of the food is wasted, so we need to look at all supply chains, whether it's in steel, whether it's in agriculture or in food industry, whether it's in all kinds of life, all aspects of life, and really reduce waste, leakage, cutting back on resource use. And of course, also in terms of digitization, really embrace this as an enabler for making people more productive. In Europe, because of demographics, we are likely to run out of people before we run out of jobs. So, and I think engineers will play a very, very important role in all these aspects, whether it's, you know, helping people, you know, be able to be productive, even at old age, whether it's the whole area of digitization, how to translate the digital solutions into real productivity, increasing activities, and also, of course, in terms of really having a much more sustainable economic activity, where we can really optimize the supply chains in all aspects. I mean, we are working, for example, with steel mills to reduce the energy consumption, cement plants, optimize power plants, and so forth. So I think there are lots and lots of opportunities, and I think it takes a lot of ingenuity, but I'm sure we will solve those problems because we'll find those solutions going forward.
And hopefully engineers will contribute with their
solution. I'm sure engineers will contribute a lot. In German, as you know, there's this important word, there's nothing too difficult for an engineer. Now, in German, it rhymes. In English, it doesn't.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. And if you believe so, that engineers can do a lot, if you have to choose one skill that you think most engineers are still lacking to fulfill this responsibility, what do you think is it?
I think, you know, these generalizations are a bit difficult. I think what is really important is to not just to find the right technological solution, but also to engage with people so that they can accept this. Yeah, I mean, we need to overcome, as I mentioned earlier, we need to overcome a lot of anxieties. People are anxious about the environment. They are anxious about new technologies replacing them. They are anxious about, you know, windcraft. They are anxious about 5G. You know, they always fear that this will, maybe, you know, create diseases or create mental disorder and, you know, whatnot. And I think it is important for engineers to recognize that it's not just important to find a technology that is sound, but also to really ensure that people will accept this. So really engage in the communication is crucial.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's like, you know, everybody wants, you know, clean energy, but nobody wants, very many, many people don't want windcraft. Yeah. And so I think we need to find solutions. Yeah. Make people part of the solutions rather than create, you know, this feeling of we against them or them against us. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it's a matter of perspective. If you think those technologies are beautiful, then suddenly it's probably okay. And on the other hand, it's a matter of your interests too, right? So if you owned the wind farm in front of your house and gain all the returns,
yes,
then it's a different story. Then
I just yesterday I saw a report about a wind park where half of the wind parks was owned by the people who are living around it and the other part was owned by a company. And so everybody, you know, in the neighborhood benefits from the wind park.
Yes, so I think this is another, a whole different perspective actually. Yeah. And personally, I think this would be maybe be the future.
Well, I mean, we have helped to also to draft government policies on sustainable energy in different countries in Europe and beyond. We have a very, I would say, passionate group of colleagues who are working on sustainability and how to really combine energy and sustainability.
I've also seen that BCG has launched its net zero pledge.
Yes.
Until 2030, right?
Yes. We want to reduce until 2025 the CO2 emissions through traveling by 30%, and then again massively until 2030. Reducing, of course, traveling, but also working with airlines to help them reduce the emissions from the planes. Mm. And of course, also finding ways, not alibis and not no fig leaves, to really capture the CO2 emissions and really deal with them in a productive way.
Mm, yeah.
But of course, I must also admit that we don't know yet all the solutions, how it will work.
Yeah.
But you know, we will spend a lot of money also on this, and in order to really not just do this for BCG, but also help many of our clients to do the same.
Yeah. At least there's the willingness.
Yes.
So this is the first step, and first the mindset change, and then secondly the implementation, I believe. Since you have introduced this net zero pledge, I believe actually 2020 was a perfect playing field to introduce this, right?
Yes. Well, the question is, where will the world be after the pandemic? Now, first of all, the question is, what does after the pandemic mean?
Yeah.
Is it the time after we have a vaccination available? When will that happen? 2021, 2022, or 2023, or maybe never? As you know, we have been looking for a vaccine against AIDS for decades and not found one. I guess we are much closer to a solution here with the coronavirus.
Hopefully.
But it will take a while, and then the question is, what will we preserve? Will there be more home office? Will there be less traveling and more video conferences? I could very well imagine that some of these things will stay. On the other hand, of course, I also know that many people don't want to stay at home and work there. It sounds nice, but when you are talking with colleagues, they say, I want to come back to the office, And now we have an alternating system. One week you are in the office, 1 week you are working from home, and people really want to go back to the office because of the relationships with people, interaction, and so forth. So it really gets on people's nerves to be just at home.
Yeah. This actually goes really well hand in hand with our survey. So last month we've conducted a survey about the future of remote working, and actually the bottom line was that engineers also want to insist on the human interactions while having the flexible working hours in the future. And for me, also the most striking number was that out of all the participants, only 8% said they are more productive in home office, and half of them wanted to have a hybrid model, and the other half was insisting on office style again. So engineers have the same notion probably.
I think I would say it probably reflects also what you sense among the BCGers. It's not trivial, and of course, for young people, the interaction is very important. Imagine when you have started, let's say 6 months ago, which was in March or April this year, and you started from your home, and it took quite a while until you met in person your first colleagues. It's not easy. I remember my very first day within BCG, so it was in the Munich office, and I was just walking from office to office to introduce myself. Some people found it a bit funny that there was somebody going around to say hello, I'm sure most have forgotten. But I think, you know, it's so important to get to know people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on video or on a conference call, there is very little opportunity for chit chat I wouldn't say gossiping, but you know, just casual interaction.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
And so I think it is really crucial. Now, when you have a formal presentation, you bring in experts from around the world, and I have video conferences, you know, a lot with Asia, so China, Southeast Asia, India, and so forth. And so sometimes I get up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and as you know, China is of course 6 hours ahead. And so I think that works quite well, because then you can bring people from around the world together, and everybody is used to now interacting with people on video. We have had video conferences also beforehand, but very often the technology was not working, or you know, something was going wrong, or if you have two or three people on video in different places, you know, the client is a bit confused. Now people are much more used to that. So I think there will be changes. There will be more opportunities. You mentioned hybrid model. Yes, I think we'll have a hybrid model to some extent. You know, what the share of the different, you know, parts will be, nobody knows yet.
Okay, so BCG has not set a concept yet how the remote working will be.
I think, you know, it depends also on the client. It depends on, the location. And so, you know, I think it's too early to say, because in some countries, people are not allowed in or out. Australia, for example, India, China is not easy. I mean, you have to go into quarantine. So a lot of things will have to work itself out over the next years, I would say.
Yes, indeed. And what about yourself? What was your experience of productivity and effectivity in home office?
I would think, you know, you probably are, on the one hand, and I think you can have more meetings in different parts of the world during the course of the day. But really engaging with clients is not easy via video conference. I mean, especially when you have, you know, the client sitting in a big conference room like this here, and the video is at one end, or the camera is at one end, and you hardly see people, and you don't see the reactions, their gestures. I think that is still something we have to work out.
So do you personally rather miss traveling, or do you love it?
I don't mind the traveling. And before the lockdown, I've been traveling every week, a lot to Asia, Middle East, Africa, and Latin America, so mostly emerging markets. And of course, it's a very different life now. I mean, I had three trips with planes, you know, to in Europe. I also took a train once, but otherwise it's with car. And then it's, I would say, 90% of the interaction is video conferences, calls.
I see. I think the pandemic has helped the digital age to accelerate, first of all.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think many aspects of life, I mean, schooling, healthcare, hopefully, and others will get a boost through this.
Yes. Like digitalization for sure, and the acceptance of digitalization, I think, will change, or has changed rapidly now.
The question, of course, is, you know, is that what we want? I mean, people, for example, talk about also, of course, online, shopping is much easier. I'm not an online shopper, I must say. But what does it mean for the shops in the cities? You know, you will see a lot more shops closing down. You will see a lot more vacancies. Is that what you want? You know, inner cities that are empty. So I think one needs to really think through what you really want. I mean, already today people are worrying about what happens to the cities. And so I think, you know, many of the implications will be positive, but there will be also developments that you don't like that much, I guess.
Yeah. I know the proverb, if there are winners, there are also losers, right?
Yes. Although I would say, I in general, I believe in win-win. I think, you know, I think this divisiveness, the polarization that we are seeing in politics, in many parts of the world now, is a mistake. People, or at least some people, think, you know, I can only win if you lose. Mm. And then they try to really exploit the opportunity. I believe that globalization has been, in overall, a win-win for the world. We've seen massive positive developments in terms of standards of living for not only hundreds of millions, but billions of people. China, obviously, is a clear example, but it's also Southeast Asia, India, the Middle East, Latin America, even in Africa. We've seen massive improvements of standard of living. The life expectancy has increased. There are, you know, the percentage of girls and boys going to schools has increased massively. The quality of education still can be improved. We see a lot less people going hungry over the years and decades. So there has been a massive improvement, and also income inequality across the world has declined. Yeah. Now, what we are seeing, of course, with some countries suffering, the inequality in some countries has increased, but across the world it has massively improved because the emerging markets have really closed some of the gap towards the industrialized countries. And I think that's a very positive development.
Yeah.
That's why I think it's really, it has been a win-win situation, not for everybody. And that's why I think it's so important that we do help people, going back to the lifelong learning that you mentioned at the beginning, really to help them upgrade their skills, learn new things, and not assume that what you have learned once, you know, is good for the rest of your life and you don't have to change.
No.
Now, I would say, you know, make people excited about also learning new things, finding new jobs, rather than saying, I've been always working in a steel mill, that's the only thing I can do, and once the steel mill is closed, for whatever reason, you know, I will be unemployed. I think that's really not the solution.
Yeah, but I mean, one is the individual level, whether you are open-minded enough to think about other opportunities as well. This is also why we do this online series, so that especially engineers can see what kind of other opportunities are there out there in the world. I think on the company level or also university level, there also need to be some changes. At least for my chemical engineering studies, I think a lot of parts of the studies are still obsolete. I would probably not need to use it anymore. And on the other hand, in my internships, for example, I see practices that I believe can be made more efficient and can be optimized. But as a young engineer, it's quite difficult to change how professors are teaching, for example, or how your boss is telling you to do things. And this is also why we have launched the public policy department at the European Young Engineers, because we had the feeling that may it be in politics, especially in politics, but also in the industry or academia, the voice of young engineers are not really well represented yet. This is what we are trying to learn right now, because obviously public policy is not the field for engineers usually. But what do you think can engineers make better?
Well, I think, you know, I really, you know, would subscribe to what you said. There's always room for improvement. And I think everybody has the right and the duty to really help improve things. That's what I tell everybody, you know, who joins BCG, to say, you know, yes, we have achieved a lot and we've made enormous progress, but there is, you know, lots of room for improvement. And, you know, whether you are, you know, just the youngest associate who joins or whether you are a senior partner, I think, you know, when you see something that can be done better, you have to say it. You not only have the right, but also the duty to do so, and let's move it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, when you come with new ideas, don't expect people to say, oh, we have been just waiting for you. You know, there will always be people who say, oh, we have, we have always done it like, you know, this, and why should we now change? There are also people who also would say, you know, oh, this is not the right way and so forth. But I think it's very important that you keep on pushing the boundaries all the time. Mm. Now, for yourself, for the team in which you're working, for the client, but also for BCG. And I would say this is really the right attitude. And of course, ultimately, in the society in which or community in which you live and work. And I think it's so important to clearly see we can do things better. Mm. We have improved and we have made a lot of progress over the years and decades. But I think that I feel should be the passion of everybody. Mm. You know, sometimes maybe it's a small thing, sometimes it's a big thing. But never to have the feeling, okay, I just do what I'm told to do. Mm. Yeah. So, and many of the solutions will be technology solutions, but also many solutions will be changing of attitudes. You know, how do we deal with people who are different? Mm-hmm. You know, how do we and to become much more open? You know, how do we engage to solve problems? Are we listening, or are we just trying to convince the others, you know, that my view is the only right view? Mm-hmm. You know, so I think an open, transparent process, a discussion, also the willingness to compromise. You know, I know compromise very often sounds like, you know, a bad compromise, but I think, you know, compromise has been so essential, and I think so. There's progress in technology, but there's also progress in interaction of people. I mean, if you think of how many wars have been fought in the past centuries, and today or the last decade, despite, you know, the conflicts we have in the Middle East and in Africa and other places, and I don't want to diminish the suffering, but fewer people have died over the last decade in wars and civil wars than any other decade before. Mm. Yeah, and I think that's also progress. Yeah, and so we need to find ways of interacting with each other and solving problems and solving conflicts without really getting at each other's throats.
I think engineers like to be problem solvers. They are known to be this type of person, and I also think they are not always the best communicators. They are, like, especially in politics, for example, I don't see a lot of people with an engineering background in politics so far, whereas I know a lot of engineers in my area, surrounding, for example, they always say, how can the politicians have decided about this wind farm like this or about the nuclear plant? It doesn't make sense. And then I asked them, why don't you get into political debate then? And they're like, oh, no, that's nothing for me.
No, that's for sure. I would say, you know, when you notice when you go into a lecture or seminar by engineers versus, you know, social scientists or political scientists or economists, you really notice the difference. You know, there's a different way of engaging with each other. But I think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, even if you have the right technology and the right technology solutions, does not mean that, you know, this will be the solution that will be chosen. Mm. Because there is skepticism, there is resentment, there are people who have fears. Mm. Sometimes, you know, these are just conspiracy theories. As I mentioned, you know, about 5G, everybody and people are now destroying the towers. Because they feel 5G is going to make you ill, and I think that's a real danger. Yeah. On the other hand, you know, not everything that is technologically possible is necessarily sound. I mean, when the assumption is that nuclear power is 100% safe, and then you have, you know, Chernobyl and also Fukushima, you find that okay. Maybe it was not the fault of the technology. These were human errors, mm-hmm. You know. And when you look into details of why it happened at Chernobyl and why it happened at Fukushima, of course there are always humans involved. Mm-hmm. who made the wrong decisions, who did not understand, you know, the implications of their doings. But I think that's also important to understand that not, you know, the technology by itself can only get you so far. If you do not enable the people to deal with the technology in the right way, to embrace it, to see it as an enabler, it will not work.
Okay, thank you very much. These were all the big questions. Now we come to the lightning round. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great. Who inspires you and why?
Well, you know, I feel inspired by people who try something unusual, who experiment. You know, not necessarily that I will follow them, but I find it interesting. It was quite interesting when your father mentioned that he is a physicist. You know, so I many years back I met a young woman, you know, in her, at that time, you know, she seemed to be old, around 30 when I was, you know, 18 or so, and she had moved from physics into arts. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, that's, I find interesting. It's, of course, it's a big change, but I think it's good that people do try out new things. When they feel, you know, they are in a hole or going into a dead end, that they then, you know, rethink this and then try out something new. And I think that I find inspiring, rather than saying, okay, you know I can do this and I will do this for the next 30, 40 years.
Yeah. Mm. Actually, he has changed from physics to philosophy.
Okay, good.
So maybe he's one of the inspirers.
Yes, maybe he is one of those. Yes, that's yes. Good. That's good. No, but I think, you know, it's really, I mean, I think people really need to try out things. And I always feel that everyone has her or his destiny in their hands. Mm. Yeah. And rather than saying, what can I do? You know, I can try out new things. Mm. Yeah, I'm not determined. My fate is not determined by some outside force. I can really try to make it work for myself and for the people around me. And this is an opportunity, but it's also, of course, an obligation.
So, and then what advice would you give your younger self?
Well, you know, I think do what you are passionate to do. Yeah? Yep. I think some people always ask, you know, okay, tell me where do I have the best opportunities, mm-hmm. To find a good job or so. And I would say, if you like what you're doing and are good at it, you will succeed. If you don't like what you're doing and do a mediocre job, even though it may be something that is in high demand, you probably will have difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I mean, you know, there are, you know, if somebody really likes to be an artist and is really good at it, you know, she or he will succeed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you know, if you're really a poor engineer, you will have difficulties.
Yes,
then
yes.
You may drive a taxi.
Yeah. Yeah, follow your heart.
I would say this, but I think it also means, you know, not just you know, be passionate about it, but you also have to really be good. And I don't mean, you know, you have to be the best in the world, but, you know, doing a good job, mm-hmm. I think, is important.
Yeah, otherwise it's just frustrating.
It is frustrating for everybody, yourself, but also for the people with whom you work.
So then, since you're always talking about being bold and also making changes if needed, what was the hardest decision you have ever made?
What was the hardest decision? I think, you know, that's... I think I'll keep that for myself.
Okay.
You know?
All right. That is understandable. Maybe an easier one. What drives you every day?
Well, you know, I very much hope that, you know, in a small way, I can make a difference, you know, together with my colleagues, at the clients, in the community, and hopefully, you know, the world will be better. Maybe not from day to day, but, you know, over the years.
Yeah, yeah, that is a nice drive. And what are your top three nonfiction book reading recommendations and why?
Well, I mean, I think the book which I really like at the moment, and I also give away a lot, is Age of Enlightenment by Pinker. That I find, you know, very interesting. I mean, of course, it also reflects my my view that we have made enormous progress over the past decades. I would say that's probably the best book at the moment. Let's stick with the Pinker book.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Top one is also good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you have touched upon this question a bit, but what important qualities have helped you to reach the position you are at right now?
Persistence.
Persistence, yeah. Short and simple.
Yeah.
All right, this was the ending of the lightning round. To end the whole session, we always asked our guests then, what is your final message to the European young engineers?
You know, the future is bright. But it's not just happening. You have to make it happen, and you know, destiny is in your hands. So you know, try out things, do the things that you feel passionate about, and do them well. And there are lots and lots of opportunities for you. So don't worry about not finding a job or not finding you know, fulfillment. It's something that you can certainly achieve, but you have to work for it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure speaking
You're
with
welcome.
You.